Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
I'll bring you to a merry place now, because we'll go to our first guest, who is standing by in London to chat to us. He has sold 300 million books, exactly that amount, and he is still writing today. It's about the latest instalment of the William Warwick series, An Eye for an Eye. Good titles. He always picks good titles. It's a ripping adventure yarn. I've been reading it. Set at the end of the 90s in Britain. And it's only been a year since we last spoke about the heist novel Traitor's Gate. It was superb. Geoffrey Archer, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver. I don't want to go straight on to that. I want to pick up two things you said. One, may I be among those to congratulate the brilliant Irish women's team on beating New Zealand.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Yes.
But perhaps I, as a simple man who've loved my rugby from a very young age, I'm puzzled to know how, when you had the greatest team in the world at the World Cup, you couldn't win. I'd got you down to win. I wanted to go and see you play France in the final and win. What happened?
I remember this time last year we were talking and the Rugby World Cup was in full swing. You were certain Ireland was going
to win. Yes, I would.
You,
absolutely.
Geoffrey Archer, cursed the Irish team.
I got it wrong again. Now, on to Trump.
Oh dear.
Statement. I mean, honestly, can I say something that will shock your listeners?
Okay.
It also insults those people who are mentally impaired. Mm-hmm. How about insulting everyone? If anyone is going to beat Trump, it'll be Trump who beats Trump.
You're dead right.
That statement is a truly disgraceful one. Oh, I'm 3 years older than Biden, and I hope no one's suggesting...
There's no sign of any issues with you, of your acuity and mental agility whatsoever, Geoffrey Archer.
Thank you.
You've proven it in the opening couple of minutes, which, you know, we're usually chatting about a novel. But it's hard to focus on other things, isn't it, when you hear something that disgusting, even at his standards, very low standards.
Well, I sat up and watched the debate, Oliver, between Kamala Harris and Trump.
Yeah.
And I put it down at 60-40. The public put it down at 63-37.
Yeah.
So I nearly got that right. And he walked out and said, I won so easily, I won't be having another debate. He lost so badly, he won't be having another debate.
Wiped to the floor again. But it didn't move the dial in terms of the polls.
No, it didn't. And if I had to put money on it, I'd put him down as the winner.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, because previously all the polls have underestimated him. And if they're as tight as they are, then that means he's probably slightly ahead in some of the swing states. But it's going to be a difficult week in America, that one for sure, in early November.
November 5.
Let us bring us back to nicer places, Geoffrey, because William Warwick. And I like the fact that you've chosen to set these novels in the recent past. And so in An Eye for an Eye, we're in the late 90s, aren't we? Because when Mr. Blair is mentioned and the Queen Mother's 100th birthday is coming up, which happened in the year 2000. So I presume, are we in 1999 or are you not really specific about where we are?
Right about 1999. But I started, of course, when he was a young constable in Nothing Ventured. Yeah. He's been moving up through the ranks with a different crime area in each book. We're now up to about 2000. He's now a chief superintendent. Mm-hmm. And in the next book, the final book, he will be a commander. And will he become head of the Metropolitan Police, the commissioner? Uh-huh. But in this book, he has a very tricky job because the Prime Minister, Tony Blair, calls for him and says, I need to close a three... He didn't call for William Warwick, sorry.
Yes.
He calls for a Mr. Hartley. Now, Mr. Hartley is a very successful banker in the City of London. And Tony Blair calls for him and asks him to go to Saudi Arabia and close a £3 billion arms deal, which would be wonderful for employment in Britain. And off he goes. But he has to have a go-between, an agent, a Lebanese agent. And that Lebanese agent takes him to a nightclub where he witnesses a murder. He's told to get out quickly and go back to his hotel. The next morning, he's arrested for that murder. And we don't look as if we're going to get the arms deal. But in comes William Warwick. All is not lost.
But that describes not even a fraction of the plot. I mean, there's a Declaration of Independence, a fair copy, which is the draft copies that Mr. Franklin put together, Mr. Jefferson put together, and also a Rembrandt painting. There's all sorts of hustlers involved, left, right and centre.
Yes, well, because the wicked Miles Faulkner gets involved with a man called Billy Mumford, a forger, who forges him a copy of a Rembrandt. And when Jefferson was in Paris as ambassador, he handwrote the Declaration of Independence, and it got lost, and the Hartley family owned it, and it got lost. And a copy, Oliver, a printed Franklin copy, went for $7.7 million 3 months ago.
Wow.
So a handwritten copy by the great man. I rang Sotheby's. They thought if it could be found, and it's out there somewhere, it's worth $100 million.
Oh, wow. Okay. So in this novel, it exists. And it's hanging.
In this novel, it exists. It's in the
hereditary home of the gentleman who's just been framed for the Saudi incident.
Correct.
So, yes.
And the poor, wicked old, his mother, who's no fool, also has a fake Rembrandt.
the forgery you mentioned, Billy Mumford, I was surprised to find out, is a real character, a real person.
Yes, I went to one of my researchers. I have two outstanding researchers who have worked on all the William Warwick books. Michel Roycroft, who was a detective sergeant in the Art and Antique Squad at Scotland Yard. And I said, I'm looking for a forger. She said, I arrested the best one in the business. I put him in jail. He's out now, going straight. I said, I need him. So he came across to see me, and I said, there's a painting in Berlin called Jacob. Anyone listening to the programme can look it up on their phones. Yeah. Jacob wrestling with the angel. Can you do a preliminary drawing? And he said he thought he could, and indeed he produced the most remarkable drawing, which is now in the front window of Hatchard's in Piccadilly. Okay. I then went back to him and said, wait a moment, Jefferson handwrote the Declaration of Independence. Can you do me a handwritten one? He said, well, not easy, Governor. The paper will have to have oil on it and tea leaves and also conker oil and rest conquer for 14 oil. Days. Conquer oil,
oh, yes,
even before
chestnut,
I can start writing. And the ink will have to be 300 years old. But 14 weeks later, he delivered me a handwritten copy of the Declaration of Independence, as in the book.
Wow.
It's a fake, of course. The real one is out there somewhere. And it comes up for sale at Sotheby's in New York, and in the audience are Trump and Musk, both wanting to buy it.
Kabir, the fun you're having with this, I mean, there's no need to go off and actually create a real forgeries, if that's a term, it's an oxymoron for sure. Just put them in the book, but you've actually gone off and, just like last year, created a replica of the Crown Jewels as part of that heist in Traitor's Gate. You love all of these kind of over-the-top gimmicks.
I love the fun of it all, and I'm still, at the age of 84, enjoying writing. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Oliver, very thrilling this morning to look up An Eye for an Eye on Amazon and see that it's 4.6 on the Richter scale. I can't grumble.
What does that mean?
As long as the public feel that way, I will go on.
That's
until
the reviews. They are the reviews.
The reviews. It's already had 250 reviews in 4 days, and it's 4.6.
I love how you're still following that.
Very much. I'm still a competitor, which is why I don't understand how Ireland could possibly have lost the
World. If it's any consolation, we haven't got over that yet either. We haven't got over the fact that we left a double Grand Slam behind us a few months later.
Yes.
You're triggering us. We'll focus on the women instead. You still love all of that. How many novels in are you at this stage?
I've done 39, two more to go. I'm going to do the final William Warwick. Yeah. Which will be the last of the William Warwicks. And then I've had an idea in my mind for the past 6 years for a book that I hope will be up there with Cain and Abel. It's been in my mind for a tremendous year, and I've now got to pray I live long enough to write it.
You know the idea, but you haven't even given a whisper of that to the winds, have you?
No. And I would remind you, it was your great Irish television interviewer, the great Gay Byrne, who was the first with Cain and Abel.
Really?
He was the first to say, long before, he held it up and said, this book will be a worldwide bestseller long before everyone else. I owe him a great debt.
Will you be delighted? Jimmy has already been in touch with us on the text 51551. Jeffrey, always acknowledge our Gay Byrne, who gave him his initial book, Books, a start and a push to writing glory. And Cain and Abel, still selling away. And there's a remake, which you were telling us about last year, that Sony is remaking the whole trilogy as a series. How are things progressing there?
About the usual speed they go in Hollywood.
Yes.
Now you mention it, I'm wondering if I'll live long enough to see the first episode. But nevertheless, it's on its 132nd reprint, so I can't grumble. My grandchildren will benefit forever and ever, and I hope I'll still be here.
You'll miss William Warwick, by the way, when you let that series go in Book 8.
Yes, the family, William Warwick, Ross Hogan, Miles Faulkner, Beth and Christina, Wilbur, they you live with them and they become part of a family. And that's half the fun of it, really. Yes, I will miss them. You're quite right.
I think the villain. I love the villain, Miles Faulkner.
Well, my wife Mary has a theory that villains are, one, easier to write, and two, the public love them even more. Miles has got his own fan club. He's a complete villain. He's got his own fan club.
Yeah.
But he's yes, and in this book, does he get naughty? But don't worry, you can wait for the final book when finally... No, I'm not going to tell you.
Right. Yes, well, so long as he's there, that's all they care about. And he's got a dastardly lawyer as well. And of course his ex-wife is great.
Mr. Booth Watson.
Mr. Booth Watson, yes.
Wah!
A dastardly character. And his ex-wife Christina, I mean, a vicious portrayal of a former mob boss wife. Mob, yes, is that the right phrase?
Yes, quite right. Quite right.
Okay, fair enough. So there is going to be a book. Have you got a deal and everything for the book that you're going to write after the series ends?
Well,
I think you'll struggle.
The one I've been thinking about for 6 years, which I got the idea, and I foolishly told my publisher, and they begged me to do it immediately, and I said, no, I will live to 88. I will do it. I will. So I wanted to complete the William Warwicks before I go on to this book that's been in my mind for 6 years. And I've already written a 100-page outline and sent it to the publisher. They are now giving me pep pills and taking me on long walks. So now I'm looking forward to it. I'm
They're
looking forward
force
to the
you
challenge.
To live.
It will be the biggest challenge since Cain and Abel.
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay. Wow. Are you still writing with the same discipline? 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. break for 2 hours. On you go. Another 2 hours. 2 hour break.
Yes, absolutely. Still every word handwritten. 6 to 8. 10 to 12. 2 to 4. 6 to 8. Bed 9:30. 10 up 5:30. First draft. Around 6 weeks, around 300 hours. Final draft, the 14th, which you've got in front of you, about 1,000 hours. I wish there was a shortcut, Oliver, but there isn't.
But you love it. And were you writing this morning?
I love it.
This morning, were you writing?
I love it. I was writing 6 to 8 this morning before I came into you. Yes.
That's how to do it, Jeffrey Archer. You can get a lift from Gay Byrne, but you still have to put in the hours.
And I've got to be on Oliver's show and let the people know.
Yes, you do. Since we're talking about politics, by the way, actually, you mentioned your reviews earlier on, and there was a good piece in The Telegraph last week, which I'm sure you read because you follow all of the coverage of yourself, it seems. And they pointed out, you know, you've got 300 million sales books. In The Telegraph, they pointed out, while those awarding literary prizes have never elevated Archer to the ranks of the greats, he is undeniably a publishing phenomenon. What is this snobbery about towards any sort of action book or any sort of a book that has a bit of fun in it?
It's fascinating, isn't it? If you're a storyteller, if you're a shanachie, as you call in your great country, you're not treated on the same level. I've won awards, can you hold your breath, in France, Germany, Finland, Sweden and America. I've never won an award in Britain. The more books you sell, the less likely you are to be considered for an award.
Why is that?
It is, to use your word, a snobbery thing. I saw a book the other day that they were giving some wonderful prize for, so I thought I'd look it up in the bestsellers list. It was number 2,749. Okay. And I just thought, give up, Geoffrey. Would I rather be 2,749 and have a literary award? No, thank you very much. I prefer to have millions of readers, and I'm very grateful to them because they stop me in the street and say, we can't wait for the next one, Geoffrey, which is good enough for me. In fact, in Ireland, in your amazing country, where, of course, Mary and I spent our honeymoon, so we have a great affection for your country. Mm-hmm. But I was walking down O'Connell Street towards Easons, and a tramp stopped me. He was sitting in the corner reading the Financial Times. Only in Ireland could a tramp be reading the Financial Times. Still, he stopped me and he said, have you got any Irish blood in you, Geoffrey? And I said, no, I fear I haven't. He said, 'tis a shame because you are a Shanachie. And I've never forgotten that. I'm proud to be
you
a
were labelled
Shanachie.
By that misfortunate yes. gentleman on the street. That definitely happened. Where did you go on your honeymoon in Ireland?
We went from, we started in Dublin, we went Killarney, Blarney, Limerick, back to Dublin. I just love your country. I love the people and I love the country. So we had our honeymoon there. You're all mad, of course. You're
completely you really know how
you're
to butter
us up. You're completely bonkers, but I just love you.
We're bonkers. We've been watching Britain since 2016. Thank you very much.
Oh, I know, but you're right. No defence, my lord.
We are all delighted to read from Ireland that you quit the British House of Lords finally during the summer, because obviously you're a Tory, aren't you? And the new Labour government.
The Labour government says it's going to get rid of all Tory peers. It's going to get rid of all hereditary peers and anyone over the age of 80. I'll be 89 at the next election. So I, along with 20 others, resigned that day, and another 20 have resigned. We've retired. We can still go to the House. We can still.
Can you?
We can't speak and we can't vote. Right. But we remain lords. So get on your knees, Oliver.
They still call the British subjects still have to call you Lord Archer.
Yeah, on your knees. Get on your knees.
Won't be happening. Sorry, Geoffrey. And that means your wife, the lovely Mary, is a dame over there.
No, you're quite right. She's a lady in her own right. But no, because of her achievements for the NHS, Her Majesty the Queen made her a dame. So she is, you're quite right. She's Dame Mary. She then went on to run the Science Museum in Great Britain and become the first woman ever to run a national gallery or museum. So she's had a wonderful career, and I'm very, very proud of her.
And she's working away, because I read somewhere that she was doing a report on arts funding across the UK.
Yes, the government keep using her to do things. She doesn't stop, and she doesn't want to stop. She's like me. I mean, it's the one thing we definitely have in common is a desire to work morning, noon and night.
Okay, very good. I think Irish people will be surprised to hear about your peerage, because you got it from John Major, wasn't it, back in the day?
I did, Margaret Thatcher put me up originally, and then she was removed and John Major carried it through, and I had the privilege of working with both Margaret Thatcher for 13 years and John Major for 7 years. Now I'm just an outsider watching the Conservatives pick their next leader this week.
Oh, my God, yes, whoever that is. By the way, before we come on to that, the Sunday Times said, I want to see if this is true, that you, in your time as Lord Archer, as the British subjects have to call you, you only voted once ever. It was a Brexit issue and zero speaking time in the upper chamber.
It's not true in the first 10 years. You're quite right. After I spoke regularly in the first 10 years and had the highest voting record. But no, when the Conservatives were beaten after 17 years, we went into opposition. No, I went back to writing.
I see. OK. Now, to the Tory leadership race, and it's a bunch of people in Ireland wouldn't be familiar with. But the choice is very simple, isn't it? You lurch further to the right in order to take on Mr. Farage and all of that horrible speech over there. Or you go for the kind of One Nation Tory, the more liberal centrist, which I think is James Cleverly. Where would you go? Which direction are you heading?
Well, by nature, I'm By nature, I'm a centrist because Margaret Thatcher said I wasn't wet. She said I was soaking. So I, we know where I stand.
It's okay.
But it worries me when I read the Times this morning and see that in Austria, the largest party will be an extreme right party.
The FPO.
And I think that's going to be the case in France and Germany in the next 5 years. And so, yes, I do worry about reform. I don't think we can dismiss it easily. And I think what's happening across Europe, one has to be very cautious and aware of what's happening across Europe.
And of course, it's all about immigration and being opposed to immigration. And those figures, in terms of the number of people who want to come to Europe, fleeing war and climate change, they're going to continue moving. And the issue is going to continue getting bigger and bigger and hotter, unfortunately.
Correct. And they have the same problem in Germany, Italy and France. It's a massive European problem. And I can't pretend I can see an easy solution.
Okay. So, but you would be for the Tories going centrist, even despite the fact that, you know, the reform will build in support because of the issues.
I am a Tory and could never, never be a member of the Reform Party. Never.
Very good. Lots of messages coming into you, Geoffrey. I want to put them to you because, of course, the literary types would say that your books maybe do not expand on the themes of life and so on. But you like this message. Geoffrey's skill at storytelling is just incredible. I'm devouring his latest unputdownable, An Eye for an Eye. I love how the characters' names appear in his other books. And thank you for getting me back to reading.
That's very kind. I'm always touched by people who... I get a lot of mothers write to me saying their children started on Not a Penny More, Not a Penny Less, and got them into reading. And
yeah,
that is always a pleasure for any author.
They're great novels to bridge that gap between the kind of children's books, someone in their teenage years, for instance, or they're a good place to go. Another political question for you, Liam and Carrick and Shannon, that's in the west of Ireland. Geoffrey, what are Geoffrey Archer's views of the monarchy now? Would he get rid of it and have a republic?
Do you know, I am by nature a Republican, but I have to ask myself, what's the alternative? And the alternative is President Blair, President Major, President whatever. And I think on balance, my attitude is they do a damn sight more good than a president would do. So I would keep the royal family. I do see there could be a problem in the future if we weren't fortunate enough to have a good monarch. We've had an amazing queen, which took up most of my life.
Yes.
And the king has started very well indeed. But heaven knows what the next generation will feel.
Very popular figures in Ireland, we have to say, because they often show more knowledge and understanding of Ireland than some of the people in charge.
Well, it's interesting you say that. That's the secret. They're more popular abroad than they are at home sometimes. Mm. And that's a strength the British cannot afford to lose.
Exactly. You were a personal friend of yours is the British Queen, Queen Camilla herself.
She's very kind about my books. Very kind indeed. She wrote, funnily enough, she wrote to me last week saying that Cain and Abel was among her favourite books, handwritten, which, of course, surprise, surprise, has gone into our special file, because I was very touched by that. She just read the latest book, An Eye for an Eye, but she wrote about that, but she wrote on the bottom in her own hand, Cain and Abel remains among my favourite books.
Very good. So she's still following your career. Has she changed?
Well, she's a great reader, you know. She reads
is,
a lot of
yes.
authors. She supports a lot of authors. She's a believer in reading.
Mm. She announces the Booker Prize every year, which was won by an
Irishman. Yes, she does. She takes it very seriously.
Dermot is in touch. He must be a royalist because he's calling you Lord Archer. Great to
Quite
hear Lord right. Archer sounding hail and hearty.
Geoffrey will do.
Love his books. Even the signed copy I have, The Short, The Long and The Tall.
Oh,
10-10 is what he says there.
Thank you very much.
It's been fascinating. Actually, while we're on the royal family, I have to ask you about the Harry situation because it's like Brexit in Britain, isn't it? Should Harry be welcomed back into the firm despite everything? The whinging, the terrible book, The Unpopular Wife. Have you a view on that?
He doesn't want to come back, Oliver. I mean, it's not a case of do we want him back. He doesn't want to come back. Where it will all end, I don't know. I think probably in tears. It's very, very sad. I had the great honour of doing an auctioned for the Royal Marines quite recently at the Guild Hall, because that's my hobby, doing auctions, as you know.
Yes.
And
for charity.
Sadly, I sat next to the commanding officer, and he said that they loved having Harry as their commanding officer because he clearly loved the job and they loved him. So I find it very hard to believe that he finds California in any way as exciting as the life he had. But there you are. That's his decision and we must live with it.
End in tears. It seems to be occurring in tears. Geoffrey, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. An Eye for an Eye is there, of course, out on sale already, published by HarperCollins. Hopefully this time next year we'll be having another chat about the final one and we'll find out exactly what's happened to William Marsh.
Yes, you will indeed, Oliver, and I look forward to coming on your show as I always do. And although I love the Irish, this year we're going to kill you on the rugby field. I'm sick and tired of
not
you being
happen.
The best.
Not going to happen. Speaking on behalf of your readers and your publishers, stay alive, Geoffrey.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy your day and happy writing later on. Thank you so much.
You too, Oliver.